Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All righty, third hour, Teak and Tierney, company from the Teak and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams. With their help, they can help you as well. Rocket Mortgage, push button. Get mortgage Tuesday around the country. Teak and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM, Channel 206. Jim Harbaugh. Do you want Jim Harbaugh to run your NFL team? According to Zach Barnett of Football Scoop, Harbaugh's reps are reaching out to NFL teams to gauge interest in a return to the pros. Let's see. 44-19 with the Niners, obviously. That's before he went to Michigan. Harbaugh's contract runs through the end of the 2021 season. He's 43-16 with Michigan, blah, blah, blah. You know, what I think gives us extra fuel is that I think that a lot of these coaches that were hired this year in the NFL really could be one and dones. I really do.
Yeah, it feels like Zach Taylor is not making any progress.
He's funny. He's the one guy that I wouldn't say.
Really? Why?
Yeah, I don't
of the
know.
Quarterback situation?
Yeah. I think they'll give him a chance to maybe. Plus, they're cheap. They're not going to want to eat. They're historically cheap. They're not going to want to eat that contract.
True.
I could see Gase getting bounced if this goes horrendous. I could see Flores getting bounced for Harbaugh, given his relationship.
Yeah, but it almost feels like they're doing that on purpose.
No, they definitely are. I agree, but you know better than
course.
I do.
It's all about, are you doing it under control? You know what I mean? Are you losing badly under control or losing gracefully under control? And it doesn't feel like Miami's doing that.
No, I don't know what to think. Like, a couple of years ago, if Jim Harbaugh was dropped at my doorstep, I would have been over the moon. Beyond pumped. I still think I'd be happy because I know he's going to bring in respect. And you would imagine the penalties will be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the one thing. Like, if you're not sure if the way the NFL shifted in terms of style, if you're not sure if he can do that, well, then he obviously needs the right coordinator. And you brought up Greg Roman, who's been a part of that for a while.
Yep.
But I think if you're a messy, directionless franchise, he will always bring respect and order,
yeah,
at least initially.
That's right. Now, the question is, which ones are those? And, could Vic Fangio be one and done there? Who knows? There's a bunch, and the problem is, the Redskins is still open. Could that one be interesting? Of course it could be. Mm-hmm. Bill Callahan's the interim. He's had head coaching experience.
Obviously, he coached against Haskins.
Yep, took the Raiders to the Super Bowl. Bill Callahan did back in the day when John Gruden ended up going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and ended up losing it to him.
Yep.
But you start to think about teams that may have a head coaching vacancy.
Mm-hmm. Jaguars?
Jaguars.
Perhaps.
Falcons.
Dan Quinn's definitely
Redskins
done.
Are one. So there's probably three or four that traditionally you'd find a head coach because it's Black Monday and what's the average, like five?
No, it's more than that. It's like 7.5.
So you think there's probably three that are going to happen. I'm talking about just traditional, not like one-and-done coaches, because that's a new phenomenon.
Yep.
You know, you get the bad coach in 1 year, you let him go.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably six jobs going to be open. So is there opportunity? Of course there's opportunity for Jim Harbaugh, should he want to come back to the National Football League. And interestingly, you thought his statistics, his records at San Francisco with 44-19, even if you go into Stanford, you look forward to this, his fifth year now at Michigan. It's like, it's about the same time frame. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like you get to 60, 70 or so games, it's like time for him to go do something
else. He's got that personality. I think he's mellowed a little bit.
Yeah, I think so as well.
I think he has. I think just being on a college campus will mellow you. I don't know that your guard is constantly up the way it is if you're the head coach of the 49ers and, you know, you're getting hit from every direction, even though the Bay Area media is pretty fair and not nearly as fervent as New York or Philly or Boston, some other hot spots historically. It's still a lot of papers, a lot of shows, a lot of TVs, a lot of clicks. I mean, a lot of things you have to account for.
Yeah.
So I think he's probably mellowed a bit. You know, I guess the thing that I still debate, Does he want to leave Michigan without delivering for his Wolverines?
I don't think so. And that's what
then
I...
Why have your reps explore?
Well, because you always want to have options. You always want to keep, you know, the door open should something profound come along. Dallas Cowboys decide to move on from Jason Garrett because he doesn't have a contract right now. And Jerry Jones really wants, you know, Jim Harbaugh. Would you, of course you're going to say yes if you're Jim Harbaugh. But you got to know that that opportunity is there. I think he stays. I think he's there's like transition happening now. We talked about this a little bit yesterday because I was out at the Penn State Michigan whiteout game this past weekend. They played hard for him. It's not like these guys don't care, you know, to be a part of a Jim Harbaugh coach squad. They don't win against good teams, and that's part character. It's part having better talent. The one thing I noticed, BT, is that when I was as I watched this game against Penn State, it felt like Penn State had these like game changing type athletes. There weren't any on Michigan, right? There just there weren't these guys who jump off the field. They're just like, man, did you see that kid?
Are they put in the right position where they would jump off the field?
I mean, Zach Charbonnet, maybe. He's a freshman running back. He ran for, I don't know, 80-something yards and 5.3 yards a carry against one of the stoutest run defenses in football.
Yeah, less than 2 yards a pop.
Yep. So maybe him, but it was a lot of, you know, pound your head against, hit the wall, man, hit the wall, hit the wall, hit the wall, hit the wall. Okay, now you start popping them out in the second half. But other than him, there wasn't a ton of them, man. There's not a ton of, like...
That's how he's comfortable playing.
It
Think
is.
About his Niners team.
It is, but it's hard to win against elite teams if you don't have a game changer.
Like a
field position changer, and I'm putting the ball in the end zone in one play. I don't care if we're 75 yards out.
Yeah.
They don't have that guy.
They don't. And even at the end of his 49ers tenure, I mean, they were kicking that they brought in Randy Moss. They brought in Braylon Edwards. They were always searching for a guy. It was always like, amazing, Frank Gore is still playing. But Frank wasn't, you know... Not running a 4-3.
No, he wasn't a home run hitter, but he was consistently. He'd give you 120 yards and a touchdown, and you'd be like, where'd that come from?
You had Delanie Walker, who was a grinder as a tight end. You had Frank Gore. We know his skill set. You had Crabtree, who was one of their receivers, more of a possession guy.
I got to tell you, the one guy they did have was Vernon Davis.
Yeah, for sure. But Vernon could run.
Because he could fly.
Vernon could run right down the seam. Yep. And they connected a lot with Alex. What's up, Mike?
I mean, you guys are talking about potential openings, and Tiki's like, oh, you know, 5 is the average of the coaching openings, and BT has drawn 7. So me and D-Cell decided to start going through team by team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what jobs potentially could be open? Like, after what's going on in New York, what we saw last night, are you surprised Adam Gase could potentially be one and done?
I want you to run through this, but I also want to give somebody something else to think about. I don't think that it's completely dissimilar from this changing philosophy on quickly moving away from quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
What the Cardinals did last year, hey, you know what? We drafted the wrong guy. Or at least in their minds, in terms of the system, the fit, whatever. You know what? We're gonna move on from Josh. And I think teams are now conditioned to quickly cut whatever they perceive to be losses.
Yeah, don't keep following downstream.
Yeah,
if you know it's not working.
Yeah, it was never like that back in the day.
No, ever.
Go ahead, Mike.
So we go through. These are the jobs that I wouldn't be surprised that could be open at the end of the season.
And now give us time to obviously jump it as you run through these. Go ahead.
So the Jets and Gase.
Yep.
Dolphins and Flores.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Browns and Kitchens.
Yes.
Steelers and Tomlin.
Yes, because I think somebody's going to want him for a trade.
Yeah.
0-7 Bengals and Zach Taylor.
No, I think they're cheap. They're not going to. What do you get, a 3-year deal? I don't think they gave
it. It wasn't even crazy. But just real quickly, the Tomlin timeline, like the trade, because you bring that up. Is there? There's no deadline for trading. Is there?
Not to my knowledge.
I don't think so. There is.
You'd want to do it well in front of the draft, so you can start
of course,
getting your.
But it doesn't matter. Like you could do it like right after the season. Hell, during the season, who knows? Like,
yeah.
There's no time.
I don't think there's
any
parameters.
You wouldn't do it in season, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think you could do it just like. I don't think you're limited.
Just
at
as
all.
Long as you give him say when you have your draft. Like so, come April, it better have already happened.
Yeah. Otherwise, the team otherwise the Steelers probably wouldn't want to do it because hey, you're giving us a 2 first or whatever it might be. We need to apply it to the draft. Go ahead, Mike.
Would you be surprised if Doug Marrone's gone in Jacksonville?
No,
not at all.
How about Vrabel with Tennessee?
They lost again this past weekend.
Yeah. I know Vrabel with Tennessee. No, Jaguars won. Jaguars won.
Oh, that's right. They did. They came back on that.
I think Vrabel seems more stable, but still, I mean, they've underachieved. They're moving on from a new quarterback.
True, but I think that saves them, actually, in a sense. And also, let's not forget their front office situation is still under, I don't know, it's moving.
It's in transition.
It's in transition. Yeah. We don't really know what's happening with the front office. So
I would lean more towards no, but it's not crazy. But I would say no.
Broncos and Fangio, it just seems like a disaster. Yeah.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Chargers to Anthony Lynn, again, another disaster team that might be on a rebuild very quickly. New running back, new quarterback, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, but I can't put the turnovers, like all the turnovers. Maybe I can, because a couple of them have been Melvin Gordon. But I can't really put it all on Anthony Lynn.
I wouldn't either, but now the external forces, and they'll feel this internally, even though it's an external force, new stadium, mm-hmm. okay? Hey, Ram, you know, and even if it's not Anthony Lynn's fault, they might have to make like a sacrificial kind of a move. I hope that they're not going to run themselves that way, mm-hmm. but certain teams do. They respond to the noise, and they could respond to that noise because they're feeling it.
So just for the record, we're through the AFC. We have 7 potential jobs. That's 7 in the AFC alone. Yeah. We're not even halfway through.
Go ahead.
All right. Cowboys, I mean, they're looking good. Garrett's
but
great,
only
but
because,
you just
Cowboys
never know.
Only because it's really what if they finish 12-4 or – you know, 10-6 and get deep into the post, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
But it's really dependent
depends
upon.
Depends how they finish the season.
Depends on how they finish.
And that's if exactly. Urban Meyer and Lincoln though. Riley are saying, I want to be there, I mean, like, at what point does Jerry say, okay, well, I can't say no to these guys?
I think that they probably do have a new coach next year.
BT, you said this, Pat Shurmur and the Giants, he just might not be the answer.
Yeah.
Boom, there's another one. Skins we know is open. That's mm-hmm. 10. Let's go on. Bears and Nagy, probably not.
It's funny. What did I write down there?
Bears.
Yep.
Interesting.
Jim Harbaugh played for the Bears. Huh. That could be a decent fit. And when we talk about Harbaugh, that's what I jotted down. I wrote down the Bears and the Giants as possible stops for Harbaugh.
People have already given up on Trubisky.
Oh, yeah.
Are they going to pull his coach out with him? That's the question.
Perhaps.
And if the
not that he drafted him.
I mean, I know.
If the Lions do what the Lions do and just bumble the rest of the season,
Patricia's safe. He's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Ron Rivera in Carolina?
Maybe.
But they're winning.
And he's shown he can win without Cam.
It's like impossible to say that he's on the hot seat because they're 4-2 without their star quarterback.
But I think his contract is up. The new owner, like Cam, with the dead money, I think Rivera's contract is up, I think.
If it's not up this year, it's soon.
It's only 1 year if he has anything. So maybe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Obviously, we know Dan Quinn's not coming back.
He's gone.
Okay. Let's look at Cardinals are good, Rams are good, Seahawks are good, Niners are good. Okay, mm-hmm. So right there, that's 13 teams we just counted.
Yeah.
As potential openings. And again, it could end up being 5. It could end up being all 13. It could even be more. Some team that we haven't even thought about. Some guy retires. Who knows? But, I mean, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for Jim Harbaugh, Urban Meyer, Lincoln Riley, whoever, to move up if they want to. There's a lot of possibilities.
I don't disagree. That's a lot of teams to rifle through. And it seems almost reckless here. But I don't think that we took too many chances. I was a little more willing. You know, I'm not a Shermer mm-hmm. guy. You know that I'm not. Where else do we mildly disagree? That's probably the only one. But it's not like we even really suspended reality and took a real risk. Like, maybe no. Those were kind of quick answers. Like, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah,
I could see that.
You know, maybe I could see that. You know, it's not a shame, but just really telling. Mm. Is it? This is happening. I'm sure not just with Jim Harbaugh, but I'm sure there's other coaches.
Oh yeah,
who are making inroads into NFL teams,
mm-hmm.
which just tells you how screwed up the process of finding a next head coach is in the National Football League.
And how unfair it is to the kids who commit to go to a school, and then their coaches have their reps looking out at the NFL they could jump, and the kid's stuck there.
You're right.
That's why we've always said, if the coach leaves, give the kid the freedom mm-hmm. to at least get out of his letter of intent and go play wherever, out of conference, that's fine.
Yep.
You don't want to play Big Ten, Harbaugh leaves, you can't play in the Big Ten. You could go anywhere else, and you could play right away. That would be fair, but they're not always about being fair. All right, Bob Costas, the World Series tonight. He's a great baseball guy. We got the legendary Bob Costas going to join us next right here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Okay, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Great news. Quick way to save money, switch to GEICO. Just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, save 15% or more on car insurance here on Tiki and Tierney on this Tuesday around the country. Obviously, a lot of football from last night, little hoops with the season beginning tonight. And, of course, the World Series, Game 1, 8:08 Eastern in Houston. The Nats and the amazing Astros, who are trying to carve out a little dynasty here. And they've got the pieces to do it. Obviously, you've got to keep everybody in place and stay healthy and you know, a lot of obstacles to get there before you get to the dynastic level, but they're certainly laying the foundation. And to talk about the World Series, bounce around a little bit, one of the broadcasting legends, the great Bob Costas, who is with us here on Tiki and Tierney. This guy's had a career that, if you go to college and you study broadcasting, if you accomplish 10% of what this guy's accomplished, you've had a hell of a career. Bob, Tiki and Tierney, how are you today?
Hey, Brandon. Thank you very much for the nice introduction. Tiki, how are you?
I am fantastic, Bob, my friend, former colleague at NBC.
Yep.
And you've done it all, Bob, and it's amazing, from football to baseball, and your knowledge of the game is intense, and that's why it's so interesting to talk to you at this point. But I wonder, like, when we look at this series, this World Series matchup, and the history of at least I should say the non-history of a Washington-based team versus this recent history, which was built with, you know, metrics and a farm system in Houston. It's this weird, interesting clash, and I wonder if there's a rooting favorite for the for the guy with no dog in the fight. You know what I mean? So it's like, who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? We always try to pit these things against one another. But I don't really see it in this matchup. I wonder if you see it differently.
Yeah, it's hard to identify a bad guy or somebody who you think is the evil empire, the way the Red Sox once labeled the Yankees. The Astros have gotten there through smarts. Jeff Lunau has pulled together all of kind of the new age thinking in the most effective way. And he's got a tremendous manager in A.J. Hinch, and he's not just a guy buried in the analytics. He understands all of it, but his relationship with his players, the clubhouse chemistry, sometimes he'll go with his gut, and Lunau and the guys upstairs are okay with that because Hinch feels the game on the field. And then just as important, Jim Crane, their owner, is willing to bend their budget a little bit. When they come to him and say, hey, look, we can get Verlander. Can we make the deal? Or we can get Cole, he'll only be here maybe for a couple of years, we lose him in free agency, but we need him. And even though we appear stacked and we're on our way to a 100-win season, we need a third ace. And they go out and get Zach Greinke, who isn't cheap. So that's a real good combination. The owner, the front office, and the guy in the dugout, not to mention the players on the field, they are a nearly perfect team. You have to look very hard to find anything that even approaches a weakness when you talk about the Astros.
No, you're right. And Jose Altuve, who was their hero, I guess you call him the hero, hitting the home run against Chapman.
I would say a walk-off home run that's engines the World Series. That's probably a little hero label.
Not really
label.
A hero yet, because they haven't won it yet, even though he is a big part of the two that they've already won. BT mentioned somewhat of a dynasty with this Astros squad. They've won two out of the last three, and they feel that way. And it's because of guys like Verlander, who we felt like he was done in Detroit. He comes to Houston, and now all of a sudden his spin rate is increasing. Just an inside baseball thing. How does moving locations change you, especially as an age pitcher, into someone who's one of the top, maybe even Cy Young candidates this season at 30, what is it? What is he, 37?
36, I think.
36 years old. How does that happen?
But, you know, it's also happened with lesser lights. Some of their middle relievers, guys like that, guys at the back end, guys who've been closers for them. Everybody, if healthy, seems to take an uptick when they get to be part of the Astros pitching staff. And I think some of that is analytics, if you're open to it, and more modern pitchers and players in general, but pitchers in particular, are open to it. They study it. They take it seriously. So they're going to provide you with all that information. And then here's a blending of new school with old. Their pitching coach is Brent Strom, who's 70 years old. But apparently he's able to spot subtle things that are beyond my particular hardcore baseball knowledge, because I never played at anything close to that level. But he's able to spot little things, the slightest thing in the arm angle, or where you're holding the ball out of the set. Whatever it is, he's able to take guys who are already good and further fine-tune them. And some guys who are just middling are able to really blossom with the Astros. So I think, again, it's a combination of new age and old school that works so perfectly for them.
We're talking to Bob Costas, and obviously Bob is just one of the great broadcasting treasures of our lifetime, of anybody's lifetime. I know you're humble, but you truly are that. And Bob is
Thank
with
you.
Us. You're welcome. Bob is with us here on the show. You know, even though I was born in the 70s, I do have a great affinity for the sport of baseball, and I take a little bit of pride in knowing what came before me. So while I was maybe crawling around during the Big Red Machine, or crawling around, you know, and just learning maybe what baseball was about when the Yankees were going back-to-back in the late 70s, I've always looked at the 70s, Bob, as the best baseball decade. You had the A's before that, back to back to back. I mean, the Charlie Finley A's, terrific. The Astros, to me, they've got an old school grit. Like they've got an old school mentality. Bregman is a throwback dirtbag, and I say that affectionately. Is there a team that everybody would know, associate with as a dynasty, that you think the Astros kind of feel like a great team from the past?
I don't think there's an exact comp there, but they remind me a little bit of the best of Joe Torre's teams in that they have a little bit of all the things you need to succeed. They don't have Mariano Rivera,
yeah,
who is a constant throughout all of it. It's very rare for a reliever to stay at that kind of level for more than a decade, and he did. And so he was always the sure thing out of the Yankee bullpen. That was a constant, and no other team that I can think of had that for such a long period of time. But the Yankee teams, the best teams in that stretch, were so resourceful, and they had a little bit of everything that you need to win. The teams that you mentioned, though, I think is a very important point. And they were preceded by the Baltimore Orioles, 69-70-71, even though they lost two of the three World Series. They go 69-70-71. Then the A's go 72-73-74 and win them all. And then the Reds win back-to-back 75-76. And then the Yankees win back-to-back 77-78. But it's only that Yankee team that experiences the first tastes of free agency. Those other teams were able to hold their core together without worrying about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got to figure out not just what to do in-game, but there's a game that takes place during the offseason and even during the season where you're trying to figure out long-range projections. Gee, if we sign this guy, he'll cost this, and we won't be able to keep that guy or attract that guy. It used to be checkers. Now it's chess.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's crazy. The one team that we omitted from the 70s was one of the most unique teams of all time, too. How about the We Are Family, the 79 Pirates, right?
Yeah, right at the tail end.
Yeah.
Down 3-1 to the Orioles. And led by Willie Stargell, they come back and win it.
Yeah.
And win the last two in Baltimore.
Oh, man. You know, so I believe we have this right. Your first professional job was with the St. Louis Spirit. Was it number one or number two?
Number two. Number one, you could hardly call it professional because they paid $30 a game.
Oh, wow.
And $5 a day meal money on the road,
uh-huh,
to do games in the old Eastern Hockey League.
Wow, okay.
Blazers.
That's amazing.
That was the Paul Newman Slapshot League. Just a few years later, the movie comes out.
Yeah.
I did the games in the 73-74 season when I was a senior at Syracuse, and I think Slapshot came out in 77.
77,
like
I think, yeah.
And I knew a lot of guys who were extras in the movie because they shot it in Johnstown,
cool,
and the Johnstown Jets were one of the teams in the league. So that was the first job.
Okay.
And then right after that, I did the Spirits of St. Louis of the ABA.
Okay, and we've all seen great documentaries on the ABA, and it was a very interesting time, just, you know, the disco era, you know, mm-hmm, drug use was very prominent. Cocaine was bursting on the scene. There was all sorts of funky music as rock and the transition to the disco. Studio 54, 70s were wild, I guess is what I'm saying. When you were doing the ABA games, could you ever imagine that basketball, whether it was the ABA or the NBA, would morph into this?
No, although I had an appreciation of the ABA that a lot of people, I'd say most basketball fans at that time, didn't, because the ABA only had a patchy national television contract. Maybe some of their games were syndicated deep in the playoffs,
mm-hmm,
but during the regular season, there were no national telecasts of games, and the NBA was not nearly as popular as it would ultimately become. But when you think about it, they adopted the three-point shot.
Yes.
They adopted the slam dunk contest,
mm-hmm,
and the first year after the merger, 10 of the 24 players in the All-Star game had played in the ABA, and half of the 10 starters in the NBA Finals between the 76ers and the Trailblazers had played the year before in the ABA.
Wow.
Cardale Jones, George McGinnis, and, of course, Dr. J for the 76ers,
mm-hmm,
and Dave Twardzik, a little guard,
uh-huh,
and Maurice Lucas, a very important player,
oh, yeah,
power forward for the Trailblazers. So that was a testament to the quality of the ABA and the kind of freewheeling, wide-open thing. That was an injection of excitement and improvisation and a jazz kind of quality,
yeah,
that helped the NBA.
Yeah.
And then, of course, shortly after that, along come Magic and Bird, and then here comes Jordan, and the whole thing explodes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Nobody ever doubted
the
viability of the ABA in terms of talent, but the way you just illuminated how many great players, like I didn't know it was quite that. That crossover was quite that palpable. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, you know, Bob, before we let you go, let's jump back into the World Series. The mm-hmm. Nationals are a team that a lot of people aren't going to give a shot, right? They swept through the NL Championship Series, and their pitching staff looked amazing from Strasburg to Corbin to Scherzer. It's like they were each trying to outdo one another, and Sean Doolittle is their closer. Like, their staff gives them credence, and they got a couple of bangers as well. Do you give them a shot against what a lot of people are saying is a dynastic Astros squad?
Absolutely, I give them a shot. A, because any team has at least a shot. Any team good enough to make the playoffs has at least a shot in the best of seven. But in this case, this is an old-school, true starting pitching matchup. You know, you used to say, hey, it's Tom Seaver against Juan Marichal.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's Steve Carlton against Bob Gibson or something like that. Now you've got that. You've got Max Scherzer against Garrett Cole, followed by Steven Strasburg against Justin Verlander, followed by Patrick Corbin against Zach Greinke. We might not see, I don't know if they haven't checked the rosters, they may have reactivated Wade Miley for the World Series, we'll see. He could start game four for the Astros, even though he had a rough September after having a pretty good regular season. But that might be the only game Anibal Sanchez would start that for the Nats. He's their fourth best starter. The Astros could conceivably go with a, quote, bullpen game in game four. But that would be the only possible matchup where it wasn't somebody who was an ace or very close to an ace going against someone else of that same quality. And if you're going to have those kinds of games, and we've had low-scoring games after a year of offensive explosion, we've had low-scoring games in this postseason by and large, if you're going to have some 3-2 and 2-1 games, who's to say the Nats can't steal one of the first two in Houston? They come back home. You know, I'd certainly give them a chance. Anthony Rendon,
mm-hmm.
Juan Soto.
Oh, yeah.
Great. You know what they have? Here's what they have. The one edge they have over the Astros, the one clear-cut edge they have, because each team has a quality lineup, and the Astros probably have a top-to-bottom edge there, and each team is loaded with starting pitching. But where I give the Nats an edge is in team speed, led by Trey Turner.
Yeah.
Their shortstop.
Oh, yeah.
And if you get in a game late in a game where you have to play small ball, which almost no team does anymore in a homer-happy era, but in a pitching-dominated series, you get into a game where a stolen base or a sacrifice or a speedy guy who can score from first on a double, that makes a big difference.
Hey, listen, it's October, so hearing Bob Costas's voice, it just syncs up with the month. You sound great, man. It's an absolute honor. Thanks for hopping on, Bob. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brandon. Take care, Tiki.
Be good. Take care, Bob.
There you go. He just sounds
happy. He's a legend. No, he's awesome.
His voice always sounds happy.
I always tell you these stories, like, because we were colleagues at NBC when Football Night in America first started, and they'd give him reads to do. He'd read them cold and just nail them, like the inflection, the punctuation. Like, how are you, like, are you reading ahead and then speaking? Like, it was so bizarre. It was one take.
You mean reading ahead simultaneously while speaking. We do this in this business. Crazy
True,
as that sounds.
But he never had to do anything else.
He's the man.
Ever had to do a second take. It was always one
so
and done.
So somebody would come out, drop it on the iPod. Yeah. Let's read this.
Bob. He wouldn't read this? You want me to read this code? Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. And he'd just crush it. I'm like, dude, there's an exclamation point like five sentences in.
It's Bob Costas.
And it wasn't like five lines. It was like a paragraph. And he would cry. He was amazing, Bob. He was fun to watch. And watch work. You talk about the stolen bases, or he did. Victor Robles also. He had 28 stolen bases.
No, they can run. They definitely have discernible advantage.
I wouldn't have thought about like the small ball aspect of having to win this series given the pitching matchups, but that's a great point. Well, it's not going to be who hits as many home runs. It's who can manufacture as many runs.
Listen, and he mentioned the names. They've got the player who very well might win the NL MVP in Rendon. You've got the one of the best 20-year-old players I've ever seen in my life in Soto.
Yep.
Who they basically let Bryce Harper walk for.
Yep.
And they've got aces. So, yeah. And they're going to have a fan base that hasn't seen a World Series game since the early 30s.
No, it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be good. They'll be ready. First game tonight. I give them a shot. They're the biggest underdogs in terms of Vegas. I think I saw since 2007, I want to say. But whatever. Baseball's different. I mean, anything can happen. So I'm going to give a chance. They'll win a few. Will they win four? We'll see. Axe update. We'll come back. We'll get the blast right after Rich Ackerman. Here's Ackerman.
Damn well.
All right, we'll get to the blast here in a sec on Tiki and Tierney. First up, though, time now for the Player of the Week. It's brought to you by Grainger. As we take a look at the one who got it done this week, it is Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson. Ravens second-year quarterback didn't throw for touchdown and completed a little less than 50% of his passes in the rain in Seattle for 116 yards and a touchdown. But he still led the Ravens to a two-score win by arguably the toughest place to play still in the NFL against the leading MVP candidate. That would be Russell Wilson, who threw his first pick of the year, brought back the other way by Marcus Peters. Lamar is on pace to shatter Michael Vick's single-season quarterback rushing record of a little more than 1,000 yards. Right now, Jackson's on pace for a little more than 1,300 yards. That's insane. Player of the Week brought to you by Grainger. Grainger's got your back when it comes to the safety and industrial supplies that keep your facility running. Get what you need when you need it. Go to Grainger.com. All right, so Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. By the way, you can always find our podcast. Just go to radio.com and the radio.com app or cbssportsradio.com, iTunes, or really anywhere to get a podcast there. Subscribe away. It's free. And always stay in touch with Tiki and Tierney. You ready to blast here, Tiki?
I am. Let's go.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right. Odell Beckham Jr. railed against the NFL. He was fined for wearing his pants that didn't go below his knees.
Yeah.
$14,000. Is it too much for a uniform violation like that?
No, because they warn you. They tell you, they come out. It's like if you have your jersey untucked, and Saquon Barkley had his untucked. I wonder if he got fined this week as well. But they warn you before the game. Your jersey's untucked. Even if it's pregame, just like tuck your jersey in. Otherwise, you got to get fined. So you get warned. I'm sure they came up to Odell and said, pull your pants down at least close to your knees. His are up by his thighs.
Yeah, that looks ridiculous.
It does look ridiculous. So, no, it's not too much. It's just about right. They told you.
What about the chubby offensive linemen that have bad bodies whose shirts don't stay in their pants? Do they get fined?
No, they usually don't. But they tell you to tuck yourself back in.
That's a chore for some of those guys
to look
here.
Neat, man.
No, listen, I have no problem. Conform. I mean, it's not that hard to conform.
It's a safety thing, too, but not really.
Yeah, I mean, those pads are his point. You know, if somebody chased me down at 18 miles an hour and they go for my knee, that little pad's not going to do much. That's what he wrote on Instagram. He's right. But you got to conform if you want to be an individual, you know, and I love that. I mean, I don't know if I love his style necessarily, but I love style and I love individuality. But, you know, some days you got to conform. If you don't want to play in the NFL, don't play in the NFL. We'll just keep writing the checks and keep wasting money. Texans Will Fuller is going to miss several weeks. He's always hurt. But boy, when he's right, he is a touchdown machine. But he's averaged only 10 games a season since he entered the league out of Notre Dame years ago. Do the Texans need to move on and find another number two target? I don't know if I'd use the word move on, but I might say reposition their strategy or their depth chart here. You know, because every year he's nicked up. Every year he's hurt. And there is going to be a point where he's eventually going to have to get truly paid.
Yeah.
And I can't invest that kind of money who's not reliable on Sunday. So they're going to have to really, that's a tough call for them.
And look, that's what it will come down to. Kenny Stills actually had a pretty decent day. And they rely a lot on their tight ends. Darren Fells has a bunch of catches this year. But Will Fuller is a difference maker in the fact that he's fast as hell.
4.33.
I mean, it's
Don't
ridiculous.
Lie.
He also is plagued a little bit by drops. 3 touchdowns on the season. He should have at least 5.
Mm-hmm. Dropped a few at Notre Dame, too.
So, yes, getting healthy is important, but I think being more consistent is what they'll look for if they ultimately want to pay him.
All right, we hit this before, but we circle back to it. Steve Kerr says Klay Thompson, quote, unlikely to play at all this season. Are we buying it? Do we think we see Klay Thompson on the NBA basketball court this season?
Yeah, I think he'll play, and especially if the Golden State Warriors get to the playoffs and deep into the postseason, he'll be, he'll be out there. It's because he doesn't want to let his team down. And if they are at that point and they need him, so to speak, I mean, it's like a perfect story to, you know, ending his season the way it did last year in defeat. And then now coming back, the Golden State Warriors need a boost at a specific moment in the postseason. I mean, it's perfect.
Yep.
So I think we will see him.
I could see it as well. The only question is, or the limitation is, you know, it would be tough to ask him to come back and defend the opposing team's best player.
No, he couldn't. I don't think he'll be that. But I think he can be a shooter. I mean, really what you need most is shooting.
Yep, just to alleviate a little tension from Steph. We talked about that. Yep, I said it as well. I do believe he'll play this season. Probably late February, early March. That's my best guess right now. And Steve Kerr is deflecting, punting, basically saying, stop asking me.
Yeah.
I've got other guys to manage. When he's back, he's back. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think he plays this season. All right, there's still seven managerial openings in baseball. Why are teams waiting so long to fill the vacancies? Does it matter? Well, part of it is there's, you know, Major League Baseball mandate where they don't want any big news dropped during important moments. I mean, remember when A-Rod opted out during the World Series all those years ago? He got blistered for that. So they're trying to be sensitive and remain sensitive to the, you know, the teams who remain. That's the story. I also think it's very much a transitional period where there's the, you know, more involvement from the front office for sure, no question. But I believe there's like I think certain teams are starting to rethink, like, hey, there's a couple of old school guys out there that are pretty damn good and pretty damn successful. Madden was one, Girardi's another. So they're almost in between philosophies and they're really taking their time.
Yeah, look, I saw Joe Girardi last week and he's already been in for a couple of interviews at a couple of different places. So you're right. It's not, hey, that guy blew me away, he's our guy, let's just pull the trigger. It's, you know, let's go interview someone else and then bring that first guy back and compare him. Like, there's definitely a more diligent process going on, and you see it. And then I think the second part is, you're absolutely right, it makes no sense to announce a manager from a team perspective if it's just going to get lost, right? And unless you really don't want it to be talked about in the first place, which I don't think any of these teams are looking to happen.
I set my nose on the mic.
Yeah.
It actually startled me. The other thing, too, is they collect data.
Yeah.
So they'll say, hey, Joe, because Joe's obviously doing his thing on MLB Network, and he knows all the players, knows the prospects. Hey, Joe, yeah, he's a former catcher. Joe, what do you think about pitch patterns with this guy?
Oh, really? All right, let me jot that down.
And if they don't hire Joe, they'll still find a way to maybe incorporate that. All about collecting information. All right, FAU's Lane Kiffin. Fined. He tweeted a picture of a blind ref, of blind refs there. Should he be fined for that?
It's funny.
Just to be fair, it was the refs, obviously.
It was a photoshopped picture of refs walking around on the field with dark sunglasses on, holding sight dogs.
Should he be fined for that? Probably not. Will he be?
No.
Probably so.
Yeah, I think he's already been fined. He's probably going to try to, I don't know, get a grief. I don't know. Who knows?
Got to worry about winning some games.
Exactly.
That's
really what they got to worry about, because his first
year.
What
has he done there? I got to look it
up. Well, his first year, they were really good. And then last year, they were supposed to be somewhat of a competitor, not defensively because they don't have the talent, but his offense was innovative. He had this great runner, and then they were terrible last season. I don't know what they are this year because I've lost, like, awareness of him.
I got it.
But, you know, the thought was
4-3 so far this year.
The thought was he would leave Alabama, go to FAU, rehabilitate his image,
which he did after the 11-1 season. But he didn't jump. He went back, and they were bad, as you said.
That's right.
And now they're average this year.
Now he's kind of sitting in no man's land.
That star is not quite as bright as it once was for him.
That's right.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
So the NBA's back. And we've got the TNT crew tonight. It should be in rare form. Shaq and Charles throwing zingers across the table that they pretend aren't real, but are rooted in realness somewhere.
I don't know.
I believe that. You know, I've always believed that.
They like to mess with each other.
I hear you, but
it's never going. They're never going to fight.
No, I'm not saying they're going to fight. I mean, at this point, Charles is too old to fight.
Yeah.
But sometimes at their worst moments, I believe that they're really ticked with each other, and there's a rivalry there that I think sometimes, for whatever reason, there's a rivalry or a conflict of person that they work
really
great together.
It really shouldn't be one.
No, there shouldn't be. Charles wasn't a center.
No.
Different era. I mean, you know, certainly they overlap, but
a little bit, but not
a little
really.
Bit. They're great together. Mm-hmm. And the maestro is Kenny, who's back.
Yeah, exactly.
Ernie. Pardon me, Ernie.
Ernie's the maestro, but Kenny is the guy.
Kenny just sits there, and when they start beating, he just kind of like he.
But he's the analyst. He's the one that actually goes.
Oh,
and tells
when he runs to the screen,
he's the one that actually tells you what's going on. I love Kenny. He's great.
He is good. They have a great show, and obviously the NBA's back tonight. World Series tonight. Boy, I think we get a low scoring game. I think both pitchers will pitch well. Who's going to win? Who knows? Predictions are meaningless at this point, especially when I told you yesterday I thought the Pats would be in trouble against the Jets. So the last thing I'm doing is making a prediction today after that nightmarish, heinous 3.5-hour sideshow circus we were all subjected to with my Jets.
Disappointingly horrible.
Ugh.
Yeah.
God, that was bad.
Yeah.
That was bad. Well, we'll talk about the hoops tomorrow. We'll see a little LeBron at AD tonight. A little Kawhi without Paul George tonight. A little Pelicans without Zion tonight. Have a great Tuesday, and we will see you tomorrow. Peace. Gotta go.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.